Is the appellant ready? Government? Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Tukey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Patrick Hoffman, and along with my co-counsel, Major Jack Einhorn, we represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Hector Nicola. The specification of Charge 3 is legally insufficient. This court should dismiss with prejudice. The government supported two theories at trial, one explicitly and one implicitly. The first theory, which was when Staff Sergeant Nicola returned to the barracks room with Corporal AA after a night of overindulgence. Once they entered the barracks room, Staff Sergeant Nicola instructed Corporal AA to take a shower to try to sober up. In that moment, she then disrobed in front of in front of Staff Sergeant Nicola and took off to the shower. In argument, closing argument, the government went on to say that Staff Sergeant Nicola told you with his own words when he indecently viewed her. Now, under that factual predicate, no one can have there are three elements to the crime of indecent viewing. One of those elements is that there has to be a reasonable expectation of privacy. Under that factual predicate, it is not reasonable to think that Corporal A had an expectation of privacy. The second implicit theory that the government put forth in their closing argument had to do with when Staff Sergeant Everett showed up. When Staff Sergeant Everett showed up, he instructed two female soldiers to go and check on the well-being of Corporal A in the shower. Government in that moment says this is what a good NCO should have done. What they were implying when they said that was that when Staff Sergeant Nicola took the stand and he went through all the things that he did to ensure her well-being in the shower, that he should have himself gone out and checked on and gotten someone else, preferably a female, to check on the well-being of Corporal AA. Now, in that moment, there was no wrongfulness to any viewing that may have occurred, of which there is no evidence that a viewing occurred. Because Staff Sergeant Nicola was acting as any reasonable soldier would in that moment when a battle buddy, a fellow soldier, is unresponsive in the shower. He knew she was in the shower, and he initially had gone to check on her after a few moments of her being in the shower, knocked on the door, asked if she was okay, and she verbalized back that she was. A few more minutes go by, Staff Sergeant Nicola thinks again, I should go check on her again, goes back to the shower, knocks on the door, no response. Verbalizes through the door, no response. Opens the door, no response. Enters the room, taps on the curtain, slaps the curtain to get her attention, no response. It's not until Staff Sergeant Nicola pulls the curtain back and taps Corporal A on the shoulder does he actually get an affirmative response that she's okay. That's when he leaves, and that's when Staff Sergeant Everett enters.
So, Counsel, just so I'm sure in my mind, you're not contesting that there's any notice requirement issue here. The appellant knew what to defend against in this case.
Your Honor,
in terms of the second incident.
Yes, Your Honor. There's absolutely a notice issue here. And more specifically, I think it could actually be more of an ambiguous finding.
Implicit in the arguments that were made. So it led me to believe that you were saying there was not a notice requirement issue in this case. You're now saying that there is.
No, Your Honor. Well, I was classifying the two arguments that the government put in. One was very express, where they wrapped their arms around Staff Sergeant Nicholas' testimony of having viewed her when she took her clothes off. The other was a little more, passive, let's say, in terms of an example of what he should have done, which he didn't. The real issue in terms of what I think Your Honor also mentioned was we now have two acts. We don't know what the fact finder ultimately convicted Staff Sergeant Nicola of. Was it when they were in the barracks room, presumably almost 45 minutes before he checks on her in the shower? Or was it when he went in to check on her on the shower? And that, in its own right, provides, questions, as this court has stated in U.S. v. Wilson, where if there's an ambiguous finding, we just simply can't find the verdict was legally sufficient.
Counsel, let me ask you this. The issue of writing or requesting a bill of particulars is kind of a lost art. But wouldn't a bill of particulars have been appropriate in this case? I mean, the defense counsel would have known what either additional or competing theories were out there regarding the viewing, would he not?
Well, Your Honor, the defense counsel knew the evidence that the government had. Right. It also knew the evidence that the client was going to testify to.
But if there was an issue of notice, confusion as to what the theory would be, wasn't it incumbent upon the defense counsel to make the government, you know, disclose what the theory was? Which one of these is the viewing?
Generally speaking, Your Honor, yes. But in this situation, the defense put forth two theories in with the defendant's own testimony that were not wrongful and more in the disrobing part were not violations of any expectation of privacy. So, in as much as the government, as the defense, more than likely just simply thought, my guy's innocent. There's no way to spin this.
Well, he might have thought that, but the question is, as a matter of law, what he should have done.
If in fact he
was confused about what the theory was, or if there was in fact a notice issue.
Yes, Your Honor.
At the outset.
If he was confused, he absolutely should have done that. I have no indication to think that he was, though.
All right.
Counsel, may I ask about the first theory about the I understand your argument that if she disrobed herself in front of him, then she wouldn't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. But couldn't the panel members have concluded that, contrary to other testimony, that he in fact disrobed her? And if he in fact disrobed her, then she still might have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Well, Your Honor, the government put forth no affirmative evidence at all in regards to that. The only evidence that came forth was the testimony of Staff Sergeant Nicola.
And they can disbelieve that and draw the opposite conclusion. Isn't that the law?
That is the current, that is what U.S. v. Pleasant says, Your Honor, correct. And the appellant would like the court to consider U.S. v. Williams is the support of U.S. v. Pleasant. And in Williams, if you look to the concurrence says that in regards to this court's decision, in their discussion of Brown, that there is concern when we use the defendant's own testimony to bolster or use as affirmative evidence. And you know, to kind of go to the logical extreme, what that ultimately sets out forth potentially is that if the government fails to completely meet any element of a crime, and if I then take the stand in my own defense and reiterate my evidence, I have now somehow improved the government's case. And that's that logic just, by proffer to this court, just is not suitable.
Isn't that, though, the Supreme Court's, doesn't the Supreme Court affirm that in federal cases?
Pardon me, Ryan?
The logic may be, I agree with your reasoning about where the logic leads to, but hasn't the Supreme Court adopted that reasoning for federal cases, that the accused's statements can be disbelieved and used against him?
The disbelief, there's a difference, Your Honor, between being disbelieved and thus being impeached versus being disbelieved and then having the ability to find the actual opposite is true. We have no...
But if you disbelieve someone, this necessarily isn't the opposite true.
No, Your Honor.
If he says, I addressed her, and they disbelieve that, what is the necessary corollary?
If they don't believe that she disrobed herself, Your Honor?
Yeah, if they don't believe that she disrobed herself, then what must they believe?
They could also believe that it just simply didn't happen, that she, for whatever reason, didn't undress in front of him, that she went to the bathroom. There's a multitude of options they have to choose from. They don't have to choose that he was the one who actually undressed her, Your Honor.
I don't understand how that would work, but go ahead.
Well, Your Honor, I would use the example of if he testified that the light was red, that the fact finder then isn't affirmative proof that then the light was green if they disbelieve him. The light could have been yellow. And if the government proffers no...
But here there aren't three choices, right? He said that she undressed herself and like threw her clothes over her, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so if they didn't believe that, we all know that she was in fact naked in the shower by the time the people came.
Correct, Your Honor.
So someone undressed her, correct?
Or she undressed herself, yes, Your Honor.
But we've already concluded that they didn't believe him when he said that she undressed herself. So she is undressed. if she didn't do it, then what's the logical conclusion that he did it?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, I'm not going to argue with you about it more, but I don't see how there's a third choice.
Well, Your Honor, the concern here is the simple fact that the government put forth no evidence to at least a center of corroboration that could lead the fact finder to believe that it wasn't that it was the exact opposite of what the...
She's naked in a shower. She can barely... It takes him 20 minutes to get her out of the shower. She's completely drunk, right? So I think that they could easily both believe that he was lying when he said that she took off her own clothes and believe from all the circumstances that he took off her clothes.
Very well, Your Honor. This also brings us back to the simple fact that we don't know whether or not that the fact finder believes or found him guilty of the incident with the disrobing, Your Honor, or found him guilty of the simple fact that he went to check on her well-being. Both theories were embraced by the government. Both theories were argued in their closing argument. On appeal, the government now raises a third argument, which is that the fact finder could have used the acquitted sexual assault ultimately to convict Staff Sergeant Nikolov. Now, this theory is being heard for the first time on appeal and was never put forth to the fact finder. As such, there's much case law that says that a theory not put forth to the fact finder cannot be raised on appeal for the government's benefit. Pending any further questions from the court?
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Suki, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Allison Rowley, and I, along with my co-counsel, Major Wayne Williams, represent the government in this case. This court should affirm appellant's conviction for indecent viewing because, viewed in the light most favorable to the government, a reasonable fact finder could have found, as the government theorized during trial, as noted on JA page 233 to 234, that appellant viewed Corporal A.A. naked after removing her clothing and escorting her to and viewing her in the shower in her barracks room. And that appellant's viewing of Corporal A was wrongful because his intent was sexual in nature and not to assist, given that this viewing occurred shortly after appellant pushed Corporal A.A. against a wall in an alleyway, forcibly kissed her, forced his hand down her pants, and rubbed his hand over her genitals, over her underwear. While Corporal A.A. was too intoxicated to consent both in that instance and in the barracks room to appellant viewing her naked. Appellant's argument that his conviction for indecent viewing is legally insufficient because his actions were not wrongful and that Corporal A did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy is based upon appellant's own testimony that Corporal A consciously undressed herself in front of him and that appellant was merely checking on Corporal A in the shower out of concern. Now, the government agrees that in the absence of any other evidence, that appellant's conviction would be legally insufficient. But that's not what we have here. This theory was presented before the panel at trial, and the panel rejected it. That is because the government presented circumstantial evidence which suggested that appellant was not truthful when he testified that Corporal A.A. removed her clothing and that he merely checked on Corporal A.A. in the shower out of concern and to assist her. As to the evidence of appellant taking off Corporal A.A.'s clothing, we have evidence that suggests that appellant knew that Corporal A.A. was too intoxicated. We have her testimony as to the amount of alcohol that she drank. We have a CCTV camera footage that shows that she was unable to walk by herself and needed appellant's assistance to walk to her barracks room. She could not open the door. Appellant had seen her vomited throughout the night multiple times. She was feeling dizzy, nauseous, and we also have Specialist Long who testified that had appellant not been assisting Corporal A.A., that she would have likely run into a wall. We also have testimony from Specialist Long who, when she saw Corporal A.A. in the shower approximately 50 minutes after Corporal A.A. entered the barracks room, that Corporal A.A. was curled up in a fetal position in the shower. Her eyes were bloodshot. She reeked of alcohol. Her words were slurred, and that she could barely walk up on her own, let alone the fact that it took her 20 minutes to get her out of the shower. Appellant was well on notice that Corporal A was too intoxicated to consent. and given the evidence of the significant intoxication of Corporal A.A., it is, viewed in the light most favorable to the government, a reasonable fact finder could have certainly found that appellant's theory that Corporal A.A. was able to suddenly get up from a bed, jump up from a bed, remove her clothing, throw them in the air, and then run into the shower mere minutes after the closing of that door is simply not believable. And the only reasonable inference is that Corporal A.A. was too intoxicated to remove her own clothing, it was appellant who did so. And in that circumstance, appellant's viewing of Corporal A.A. naked constituted indecent viewing. As to the theory of appellant viewing Corporal A.A. in the shower, a reasonable fact finder could have found, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, could have found that appellant was not truthful when he testified that his intent was merely to assist. And we know that given the events that occurred shortly thereafter with appellant touching Corporal A.A.'s genital area in an alleyway, and his actions are completely counterintuitive of what we would expect someone who genuinely wanted to help someone else. For example, he closed the door against Barrick's policy, and also against Barrick's policy, he did not sign in with the CQ. He rejected Specialist Long's suggestion that they merely leave the room and let CQ check on her. He told Specialist Long to leave, and so he's isolating Corporal A, much like how he isolated Corporal A immediately prior to sexually committing abusive sexual contact with her in the alleyway. He also admitted twice during his testimony that it was wrong to enter and stay in Corporal A's room without Specialist Long and to be in a junior soldier's room while naked. And given all of these circumstances, a reasonable fact finder could have concluded that appellant's viewing of Corporal A in the shower was wrongful. Pending any further questions, this court should affirm appellant's conviction for indecent viewing of Corporal A.A. because considering all the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, a reasonable fact finder could have found beyond a reasonable doubt that appellant viewed Corporal A.A.'s private areas after he took off her clothing and took her to and viewed her in the shower while she was too intoxicated to consent and with a sexual purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Your Honor, my apologies and my fervor to get up here to start my argument. I forgot to ask for permission for rebuttal.
Yeah, I bestow it upon you.
Just to my colleague's points, appellant's position is there has to be some sort of interplay between the corroboration, or there is some sort of interplay between the lack of corroboration in terms of the government providing some sort of affirmative evidence to what happened in that barracks room when it was just Staff Sergeant Nikla. And there's also something there in terms of the ambiguity issue of, what we're still not sure, we cannot be certain which actus reus the fact finder ultimately decided to convict Staff Sergeant Nikla of. And that is an issue. It legal sufficiency, Your Honor. Yes, it was not the issue, but I think it goes to show the utter lack of certainty that the government had in its own case when they're providing multiple theories of culpability and no affirmative evidence to support either. With that said, pending any of the court's questions.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. And the court stands in recess pending further order of the court.
All right.
The court stands in recess.